I do not fundamentally agree with indirect lending. When you look at what it can do to your balance sheet, the difficulties you have sometimes with funding those products, especially in a rising rate environment or a steady high rate environment, your margin compression is going to be a real thing.
Welcome to 22 Minutes in Lending, your go-to podcast for insights on all things lending. From lending practices, regulatory updates, how to enhance lending efforts, and more. In each episode, Vince Passione connects with industry leaders to discuss the latest trends and happenings around the lending industry. Let's dive into the latest in lending.
Welcome back to 22 Minutes in Lending. I'm your host, Vince Passione, and today we're joined by Devin Lyon, the President and CEO of Central One Federal Credit Union. Devin brings a fresh, operationally driven perspective to the lending conversation, pulling from a deep background in compliance, risk, and member experience. He spent years helping credit unions transform their operations, and now he's turning that expertise towards lending innovation. Devin, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome. So Devin, let's start off with, tell us about Central One. Tell us about your membership, the communities that you serve. I know you've been on board now since 2022, so there's probably a little bit of a transitional journey for you. So talk to us about it.
Yeah, Central One, it's been an outstanding journey. And in fact, this year it took a different leap, right? We did a rebrand that launched in May. We also completely revamped our website. You know, we had an oak leaf as the logo for a long period of time. And now we have the shield that makes a C. And in Massachusetts, it's one of the most competitive markets in the country, right? And you have a lot of mega banks, you have a couple of neobanks, and a ton of credit unions, over 80 credit unions between state and federal charters in Massachusetts alone. So at Central One, we really took a look at what makes sense and what resonates in our market. And that's when we launched our Wicked Local Banking tagline that's now trademarked, is we wanted to double down on being local, being in our communities, and really taking a look at strengthening everything that we touch. So at Central One, we like to say, you know, we provide banking as it should be, local decisions, meaningful relationships, and a commitment to the places we call home. Obviously, like most credit unions, we reinvest our earnings to deliver better services, but we want to strengthen your financial journey and the community. We make sure that because our members are our owners, that makes all the difference in how we do things. As an organization in central Massachusetts, between Worcester, Norfolk, and Middlesex County, the communities that we serve, we want to be known as a four impact organization, whether it's through our lending, our deposit gathering, our financial literacy, or our philanthropic efforts.
Now, talk about Worcester. You know, I've had a chance to go on campus. I guess Clark University is right in your backyard, aren't they?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, and that's an area I was doing some research before the call, right? Poverty rate is pretty high. It's about double the state average, about 20%. How does that impact the way you view member services?
So when we are crafting our products and services, I want to make sure that no one in our communities are left behind. So we have created specific products that address all phases of life. We, this year, which is brand new, we've started with the Massachusetts HEAT loans. That's been wild successful. We have just launched a credit builder product to help people who are either traditionally underbanked or non-banked, to help folks with either thin credit profiles or damaged credit profiles to really come in, engage with Central One, and to help them through their lending journey get to better credit tiers and better credit quality. We've worked
Kevin,
very
can I
hard
stop
to do
you
that.
For a second? Because
Please.
This thin file situation, there's a lot of conversations about,
yes,
you know, thin file, damaged credit, clearly highly regulated, highly scrutinized. We hear about cash flow underwriters like Nova Credit. We've got folks that are now like Bloom Credit that are allowing you to bring in your bill payment if you want to, right? Your wrench. What are you doing on that thin file specifically to help boost credit?
So we are currently in the process of doing a full RFP for an additional underwriting engine that will ride alongside our traditional LOS to help us bring in additional data points and leverage some AI specified underwriting so we can find ways to say yes to a deeper portion of our membership. We feel that some of the traditional underwriting metrics are extremely valid, but in order to be able to help as many people as we can, it's clear to us that our underwriting ability and analysis needs to cast a wider net.
So, when I think about that, it triggered me on the lending product. So, look at, you've got a pretty diverse portfolio. We'll start with education lending, which is near and dear to my heart. So, thank
Yes.
you for being one of those trailblazers and being in education lending.
Yes.
So, you got about $5 million or thereof of non-federally guaranteed loans. When did you start? What was the motivation? What have you learned on that? Because from a life stage perspective, I see that as the entry product, and then I want to ask about the education refinance product and how you tie that into life stage financial planning.
Student loans were set up before I came to Central One. That was the previous CEO and the current SVP of lending, recognizing a need and having a program available.
Especially where you are, right? In
Right.
Massachusetts.
I mean, there's a mo we are spoiled for choice in Massachusetts for educational opportunities of all types. So one thing we're currently investigating is, does our current commitment to educational lending match what we're going to see as needs going forward? And that's in terms of duration, in terms of amount available, in terms of some co-signing abilities. So that's something we're looking at again, using data, using our expanded field of membership. Do we need to do more in that space? The answer is probably leaning towards yes. In terms of answering, how do we see that as an entry product? It's unique. There's some folks that join the credit union that will say, I joined my credit union because I needed an auto loan. That's seemingly the gateway drug that a lot of people say. That's how I started at the credit union, right?
Indirect lending, right?
Which I will get to that in a second, which we do not do a lot of, very strategically why. But for educational lending, it is something that I want available to the parents in our field of membership, their children, and then future members to know that we have a product that is essentially sometimes the start of a lot of people's financial journey.
And today, why do you think that more credit unions aren't doing education lending?
There's two very diametric differences on why a lot don't. The biggest problem, and this is where credit unions, ourselves included, are not as competitive as we could be, is because of our statutory length of loan. Right now, credit unions under the Federal Credit Union Act can only write loans for 15 years. So a lot of private student lenders, 20, 25, 30 years. So our amortization schedule on student loans is higher than it is on others. So it makes those payments a little bit harder. We're not as competitive. Working with ACU, which is our federal trade, and working with the CCUA, which is the New England State League, we're lobbying to try to get an expansion to either 20 or 25 years. So I think a lot of credit unions, very much on its face, will say we're already at a disadvantage in how we have to write these. So if we know that going into a product, what would the take rate be? And is the juice going to be kind of worth the squeeze? So I think a lot of lenders in the credit union space hide behind that decision.
No, that's good insight. Really good insight. All right, so let's switch up. Second, near and dear to my heart, auto from my history at Dealertrack. So you're not an indirect auto lender, you're a direct auto lender. Is that what I should be taking
We
away from your comment earlier?
are heavily direct. We have a very, very, very small indirect presence. I am a strong proponent of direct lending. I do not fundamentally agree with indirect lending. I think that there are a number of credit unions that do it very well, but I think when you look at what it can do to your balance sheet, the difficulties you have sometimes with funding those products, especially in a rising rate environment or a steady high rate environment, where if you're not getting low cost funding in and you're having to fund a robust indirect lending portfolio, your margin compression is going to be a real thing. Typically, delinquencies, based on every study and true data, indirect delinquencies tend to be higher than direct relationships. And then you have this juxtaposition of you're putting a lot of owner voter shares on your books, but then these amount of marketing dollars and time you spend to try to convert an indirect relationship to actually know who and what your credit union is, and then engage with them more like a direct relationship would. It's bad money chasing it, right? Because you get this 1 to 2% lift on people who will ever engage you for a second or even a third product. I just view that as too much volatility on the balance sheet. I would rather us really get good direct loans on the books.
This is Jim Merrill, President and CEO of Inspire Federal Credit Union. For the last 13 years, we've partnered with LendKey to elevate our lending services and strengthen our commitment to providing the best financial solutions for our members. The team at LendKey is not only knowledgeable and responsive, but also genuinely committed to our success. They have empowered us to better serve our members and have been a true partner, not just another vendor.
So let's move. Mortgages, big part of your portfolio, $450 million, very large for you. Tell
Yes.
us how it's structured. How much is fixed? How much are ARMs? And then how do you manage that, the credit risk?
So with us to manage credit risk, we do the majority is variable rate. It's a very good product for us. We have a number of different options in the variable rate portfolio. We do not do a ton of fixed rate. And the reason being is, again, business decision, balance sheet, risk management, fixed rate in different environments. Sometimes you're going to make a little more, sometimes you're going to make a little less, but you don't have long-term risk on your books in terms of, hey, it's a low rate environment. We're putting a lot of 30, 40, 50-year fixed, sorry, 40-year fixed mortgages on the books. And then you have a raising rate environment, and then you have a decent portion of your portfolio that's underwater. You can't participate that out, unless you take a loss. So we like our variable rate products. It allows us to pull some different levers and take advantage of some higher rate environments and keep us competitive in lower rate environments. And each time it gives the member the maximum availability to say which product works for them.
That's great. And the delinquencies are low across the board. Is this just, hey, because I am, following on your strategy of it's direct lending, it's to my member, the social pack of, social finance, which is credit unions are built on. Is this the result of that?
It's partially the result of that. The other thing we have is an incredibly efficient member solutions team. And this is a team that works with borrowers before they get into issues. And it either works with modifications or changes for folks to ensure that they don't end up in a cycle where you have to do a foreclosure, you end up with a delinquency. that helps with both of our financial education and working with the members. Because look, it's not enough to say we're going to be there when everything's going well in your life and you take a loan from us, and then 6 months to a year later, you've had a life event and now you're potentially in some financial difficulty. For us to say, well, it is what it is, and we're just going to go either to foreclosure or continued delinquency. No, it's all life stages. It's like for better or worse. And the Member Solutions team does an amazing job managing and assisting folks through that process.
Let's jump to deposits because I think there's something to be learned here for our listeners. So 50 basis points, how do you do it?
Like everyone, 2023, 24 it was the famine of the feast, right? Everyone was running deposit specials. We were no different. So we brought in a significant amount of very high price CDs. At the same time, we had a number of long-term investments that were coming back due to us. So instead of reinvesting, the financial wizards, both my CFO and his team, really looked at our balance sheet and said, okay, we're going to aggressively pay down some of our borrowings. And in conjunction with that, we got rid of some of our high rate borrowings that we were using to fund some of our lending activity. And our deposit gatherings started to renew. So those 6 month specials kicked back at a lower rate when they came due in late 24, early 25. So we've retained in the high 80s, low 90s, the majority of the dollars that came in when we were running specials. So it's about lessening the volatility of rollover and having to run special after special. And we've been able to reduce our need for our borrowings by taking some of the longer term investments, which were great returns at the time in a low rate environment, but now would look, almost negligible in actuality, and taking that money and paying off the borrowing so we can reinvest in some other things.
So let's move from another D, from deposits to data, right? As I said, I was watching your senior broadcast interview. I'm a computer scientist by training. You said the word, "Hey, I need a data dictionary." And it's the first time I've heard a CEO of a credit union talk about data dictionaries. And then you had this quote. You said, "Data isn't about dashboards, it's about accountability." So what do you mean by that? And then tell us about your journey with data at Central One.
So, what I mean by data is accountability. If you use data and it is good data, that means that decisions you're going to make are informed decisions. So, what you're saying to your board, what you're saying to your membership, what you're doing strategically is built on a greater foundation of certainty. And then it's about executing on where you're using the data and what you're doing for your vision. That's what I mean by accountability. My data journey started, funny enough, I went to CUlytics back, I think 2018 or 19 was the first year I went there as an attendee. And I did not have a lot of data analytics experience. At that point in time in my career, I was a VP of strategic research and insights for a credit union in Needham, Massachusetts. And in my previous roles, compliance-wise, I would use complaint data to kind of make some decisions about where do we need to get an audit or where do we need to tighten up certain things. So I had experience with using with data. When I went to CUlytics and saw all of the things other institutions and vendors were using with data, I'm like, this isn't just, the great saying, data is the new oil. It's like, no, data's the foundation that you just need to build your organization on. So within Central One, we've been working with Ann Legg and her organization Thrive to do a number of data sprints. Our new CIO is in the process of vetting and getting our data lake setup, which should launch by the end of the year. And then in 2026 and beyond, it will be CRM, data visualization, the move towards personification, and working to continue to strategize the use of data in every single organizational department that we have. Because I firmly believe that good risk management principles and being a good partner to our communities requires us to leverage data to make the best decisions, because at the end of the day, we're using our members' capital to invest in the communities we serve.
So it's great. So you clean the data, you normalize the data, now you got the ability to do analytics. Now you're gonna drive the business. We're at AI. Now we have to talk about AI.
Okay.
So is it predictive tools and underwriting? Is it marketing? Is it personalization? Where are you gonna start? I'm sure it's all the above, but what's the one that you say, when I finally get there, the shiny object, the first one is
the very first use case of AI at CentralOne will be with underwriting. And that's simply because there are so many good vendors that can bring in an AI underwriting engine that uses so many different additional pieces of data than just your standard scoring models and your LOS.
Sure.
And that to me drives us to saying yes more often. And that's an immediate benefit the membership will see.
That's great. Well, I think I know what you're going to answer my final question. What are you personally most excited about heading into 2026?
Personally excited about for 2026. I look forward to us getting beyond the first steps in our data journey. Because to me, in talking about it and strategizing it and visualizing it for a period of 2 years across strategic planning sessions, when we start to see the results of the data lake, the visualization, the use of AI in certain sectors, that to me is what excites me most.
Yeah, in your position, well, you really are, based on this story. And look, direct lending, what you've done there is makes an awful lot of sense, and it shows in your performance. You know, deposits the same, and then you know, I look at the data story. I think it is an important one, and it's paying dividends. I'm sure it's going to pay dividends in the future. So, thank you. It was a great conversation, Devin. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks to our listeners. If you enjoyed this episode, please make sure you subscribe so you can hear future episodes. And I'll see you back here at our next 22 Minutes in Lending. Devin, thanks again.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the 22 Minutes in Lending podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. You'll find links to any resources mentioned in the show notes. If you're enjoying our show, be sure to subscribe and leave us a 5-star review.